time. House Democrats finished the first day of their opening arguments in the impeachment trial of U.S. President Trump, telling the Senate the president should use a corrupt scheme to pressure Ukraine to help him get reelected through investigating a political rival. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler said the president's actions were part of a pattern of corruption.
This is the story of a corrupt government-wide effort that drew in ambassadors, cabinet officials, executive branch agencies, and the office of the president.
And Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz said that Democrats are picking and choosing who to criticize about U.S. relations with Ukraine.
If there is such a compelling national security interest to give military aid to Ukraine, then what do these House Democrats have to say about the years that Barack Obama refused to give lethal military aid to Ukraine?
Trump is accused of abuse of power and obstructing Congress. He has denied the charges and called the impeachment a hoax. Chinese state media report that authorities are closing airports and train stations, as well as canceling long-distance bus routes in and out of the city of Wuhan in a bid to limit the spread of a new flu-like illness. Wednesday, the World Health Organization delayed a decision on whether to declare an international emergency. Dr. Michael Ryan is the head of the WHO's Health Emergencies Program.
The primary issue is to limit human-to-human transmission, to reduce secondary infections, especially amongst close contact and particularly in healthcare environments. We need to prevent transmission through amplification events and super-spreading events, and obviously prevent further international spread.
So far, about 17 people have died of the virus, with hundreds of others sickened. This is VOA News. And Japan's government is urging its citizens to avoid unnecessary travel to Wuhan, China, as a result of the outbreak that has seemingly originated there. Iran's president told European powers Wednesday not to copy the United States by undermining Tehran's strained nuclear pact with the world powers.
Britain, France, and Germany launched a dispute mechanism in the deal this month, accusing Iran of violating the deal that has become increasingly frayed since Washington pulled out in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Tehran. Rouhani warned on his website, quote, "I am emphasizing that if the Europeans make a mistake and violate the deal, they will be responsible for the consequences of their actions." Iran has gradually rolled back its commitments under the 2015 deal, arguing that it has a right to do so because European countries failed to protect it from U.S. sanctions.
That is Reuters' Emma McCarthy reporting. The Trump administration is expected to place new visa restrictions on so-called birth tourism, where women come to the United States to have babies in order to get a U.S. passport for the child. APZ Donahue.
The new rules would make it more difficult for pregnant women to travel to the U.S. on tourist visas. Birth tourism is a lucrative business. It involves women traveling to the U.S. to give birth so their children can have a coveted passport. Sources tell the AP women would have to convince a consular officer that they have a legitimate reason to come to the country. Under the Constitution, anyone born in the U.S. is considered a citizen. There are questions about how officers would determine whether a woman is pregnant to begin with and whether a woman would get turned away by border officers who suspect she may be pregnant just by looking at her. Ed Donahue, Washington.
President Trump says that his administration is going to take a look at possible cuts to social safety net benefits like Social Security and Medicare. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
It came up during a CNBC interview at the sidelines of the Davos Economic Forum. With a budget deficit nearing $1 trillion this year, President Trump was asked if cuts to entitlement programs would be a consideration, to which he answered at some point they will be. Early in the 2016 presidential campaign, Trump said that he was a different type of Republican who would not cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. He has already proposed deep cuts in Medicare payments to hospitals and is working to end the Obamacare health insurance program. A White House spokesman says the president has kept his commitment to the most vulnerable Americans. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
More at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. In Malawi, the man accused of allegedly attempting to bribe constitutional court judges is expected in court today, Thursday.
The public perception that is there with the arrest of Mr. Ntinyangila is that he may have tried to bribe these judges actually on behalf of the ruling party, which is being accused in this election.
Makumbo Mutale is a Malawi governor's commentator. More than a dozen people were killed Wednesday in South Sudan's disputed Abyei region. Efforts towards a common currency in West Africa continue, although increasingly complicated. And Guinea's government accuses protesters of trying to destabilize the country.
You can protest. That is a constitutional right. But burning vehicles, attacking police stations, attacking civilians, that is not a democratic way to protest.
Amare Sampare is Guinea's information minister, but the opposition says it has a constitutional right to protest. And South Africa is slowly embracing veganism. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Malawi, the man accused by the country's anti-corruption commission of allegedly trying to bribe judges of the Constitutional Court is supposed to appear in court today, Thursday. The court is hearing the case about Malawi's May 21, 2019 presidential election brought by two opposition parties against the Elections Commission and President Peter Mutharika. A verdict is expected anytime next month. The anti-corruption commission arrested Thompson Pinganjira Wednesday after it said it received a complaint from the Chief Justice that some people allegedly attempted to bribe the five judges of the Constitutional Court. Mr. Pinganjira is the Chief Executive Officer of the Financial Holdings Limited. Makumbo Mutale is a Malawi governance commentator and a member of the Political Association of Malawi. He says a magistrate court in Zumba granted Mr. Pinganjira bail late last night.
I can confirm that the magistrate court has granted Mr. Pinganjira a bail. I think the bail has been granted around midnight. As I'm talking now, he has left a police station where he was detained following the allegations that he was involved in the attempted to bribe the judges.
So then, is he still going to appear in court on Thursday?
Yes, definitely. According to a corruption bureau, they indicated that on Thursday. So today we expect him appearing for the court to answer those charges. But I think maybe the issue might be that the way the public may receive such a news may be a bit hard, considering that people really expected him to stay maybe there for some time, mindful of the nature of the issue at hand. So definitely the news may be received with mixed reactions from the members of the public who are really excited with the news following the disclosure by SCB earlier on that they were not going to effect the arrest as soon as they could because they're still doing the investigation. But then I think it's because of the pressure that the civil society was putting on the matter to say that we needed to know the person that attempted to bribe the judges. Maybe that's why they have actually given in to that public pressure to arrest.
The Constitutional Court is hearing the election case, which I think they are supposed to make a ruling sometime early next month. If the allegation is that Mr. Pinganjira tried to bribe the judges on the Constitutional Court, on whose behalf are they alleging that he allegedly tried to bribe? Is it the petitioners or the Elections Commission or the government?
According to the statement that the Anti-Corruption Bureau had released, indicated that the two accused persons, one being a businessman, whom Pinganjira now is, and then the other one being a senior government official, they did that in their personal capacity, did not establish whether they were connected to a particular party. But then I think looking from experience, how Mr. Pinganjira is being perceived in the public space, Mr. Pinganjira is connected to the ruling party, the BPP, which in this case is being accused alongside the Malawi Electoral Commission on the matter. So the public perception that is there with the arrest of Mr. Pinganjira is that he may have tried to bribe these judges actually on behalf of the ruling party, which is being accused in this election. So definitely what you'll be seeing as be getting the public reaction with his arrest is that definitely he was trying to do this in favor of the ruling party. But I think it's also important to note that these two issues are separate, though related to some extent. And looking at the verdict, I think the courts are clear that they're going to base their evidence on the issue of the election on the evidence that was presented before the court. So this is just a separate issue that, of course, may have some implications in as far as the public reception of the court verdict.
Makumbo Mutale is the Malawi governance commentator. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. More than a dozen people were shot and killed Wednesday in an attack by armed men in South Sudan's disputed Abyei region. The United Nations Interim Force for Abyei, which is working to keep peace in the region, says it has deployed forces to contain the situation. Lucy Pulney reports from Nairobi.
Daniel Adekera, spokesperson of the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei, says the early morning attack on the Ngok Dinka community left several casualties.
The number we have as of now confirmed by our troops is 15 people dead, 3 children missing, 25 wounded, and 19 houses burnt down.
Adekera tells South Sudan in Focus the attack is likely a reprisal attack and an investigation is underway.
From all indications, the perpetrators are from the Nyerere tribe, because 3 days ago there was a similar incident in the same place where 3 Nyereres were killed, purportedly by the Dinka. So this seems to have been a repressor attack from the Nyerere tribe. But we are investigating further to confirm.
Adekera says the two communities have been engaged in meetings ahead of the dry season migration period to ensure that peace prevails.
The meetings we arranged was to preempt escalation, as it were, or any incidents of violence. Because normally, during migration, we hold these pre-migration meetings just to prepare them and get them to understand how they want to do that to be peaceful. So far, the meetings have been peaceful, so this has come to a surprise to us, as a matter of fact.
He says UNISFA troops have been deployed in the area to control movements and contain the situation from escalating. However, Abyei's chief administrator, Kuala Lord Kual, said more people were killed in the attack.
There was an attack on the village called Kolom. It's about 12 kilometers north of Abyei. This morning, a group of the Nyerere attacked the village at around 7-10 minutes. The attack resulted into the death of about 32 people killed, among them about 9 children. Wounded people are 24, among them also 9 children. This is the last statistic we had. And then about 22 houses were burned.
Nyerere leaders could not be reached for comment. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi, Kenya.
The Guinean government has again accused the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, the FNDC, of engaging in violent acts intended to destabilize the country. The group has been leading protests against an alleged possible third-term bid by President Alpha Conde. In a new communique, the Ministry of Security and Civil Protection said the protesters have elevated their tactics by resorting to setting vehicles on fire and spilling oil on public roads so as to put the picture on social media and to create the impression that Guinea is unstable. The government also accused the protesters of ransacking a police station in Dalaba and looting weapons, which it said had been stored there. Information Minister Amara Sampare says as many as 17 people have been arrested.
We are accusing them of instigating populations to get into riots, to get into insurrection, which is not demonstration. When you spoke about demonstration, you're supposed to make people out with banners, with different statements against what they're fighting against on. But these FND people, they're trying to get the country into trouble, into, I can say, civil war, which is completely banned by the government.
When you talk to members of the FNDC, they will tell you that they are not violent, but they are trying to make sure that they don't want President Alpha Conde to change the constitution.
Yeah, you can protest. That is a constitutional right. But burning vehicles, attacking police stations, attacking territorial administration offices, attacking civilians. That is not a democratic way to protest. We know the different ways in democracy when you want to express your opinion. And the best way to express your opinion is to go into a vote. The president has proposed to get into a referendum process in which every civilian that is living in Guinea will be able to express his opinion on the new constitution. So we sent a formal call to our partners from the opposition to accept to come back into a democratic process and accept to go to the votes, which is the more civilized way to resolve our differences of opinion.
Are you suggesting in the communique that the protesters might have taken weapons from the police station?
Yeah, it should be noted that the weapons that they have stolen were stored in the weapons store, where officers do not have access because of the formal ban on the possession and use of lethal weapons in policing. The fact is now the protesters have with them some weapons that can kill people, and that's going to make the more difficult the mission of the government to find out who are the killers of the civilians during the protestations, as they are authorized or not.
You know, when I speak to the opposition, they say that they have protested peacefully and nothing has been done, and it seems that President Alpha Conde is going to go ahead with the change of the constitution. They also say that because of that, they have decided to carry their protest to another level.
But do you seriously think that people that are burning vehicles at various locations to create a feeling of insecurity, that people that are spilling petrol on the roads and caused accidents where some civilians were hurt or protested peacefully. I mean, that is a joke. These guys are not peaceful.
Mr. Sampare, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much, James.
Amara Sampares, Guinea's Information Minister, who is speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 23rd. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. In Guinea, the members of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, the FNDC, say they have a constitutional right to protest. Sidya Touré is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party of Guinea.
People are protesting against the government for one reason. You know, in 2009, we have very, very big protests in Conakry against the military who want to stay in power. 157 people was killed. We decided to have a constitution, and in this constitution, it was very clear nobody can absolutely have more than two terms. Alpha Conde want to change that only to stay in power. So people are threatening protesting against us. That's absolutely right.
But the government say you are doing this intentionally to create the impression that Guinea is unstable.
I think the country is stable. We started protesting 6 months ago very clearly, no problem. And you know that from 14th of October, in 1 month and a half, 23 protesters was killed by policemen. Nobody was arrested by what. I think the stability is coming from this kind of things.
One allegation here is that the protesters attack a public building in the area of Dalaba, where the central police station was ransacked and looted. The weapons that were stolen there were taken by the protesters.
I don't have no proof of that, you know. Dalaba is more than 25 kilometers in Guinea. And, you know, we have no road, we have no electricity, we have no nothing. I don't know exactly what happened in Dalaba. What can be possible? Because, you know, they're killing people. They're harassing them inside their house. But I can say it.
Now the government is threatening that these acts, they are offenses that are punishable by imprisonment.
They are arresting protesters every day, you know. That's since we started this in, in 3 of April, 14th of October, please. Many people have been arrested. We send the lawyers, and we have no reason if we see 2, 3, or 10 young people somewhere, they go, well, they arrest them. Sometimes we commission, the lawyers, sometimes they don't want to let them go. And so we have a kind of dispute about this, about arrestation, for sure.
Sidi Touré is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. The efforts by West African countries to secure a single currency outside of the CFA continue, although such talks have become increasingly complicated. This month, Anglophone countries in the region said they objected to the French-speaking bloc of countries' announcement that they would call their new currency the ECO, a name previously agreed upon by the Economic Community of West African States for the currency of the entire region. Ndungo Sila is an economist and program manager at the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation.
Every country has to meet a number of criteria called a nominal convergence criteria. That means criteria of entry. For example, countries should have level of inflation rate 10%. Their government should have a level of debt compared to GDP below 70%. They should have a public deficit below 3% of GDP. You know, last year, they were not met by any country except Togo. For me, this current situation will lead to the status quo because the criteria of entry were imported from the European Union. And those kind of criteria, for me, are not treated for African countries because African countries have economies that are very volatile, very dependent on the international context.
So the problem, as you see it, is that West Africa is still using a Western criteria for their currency, yeah, for their monetary policy. What do you think the step forward should be?
My own take on that is very, let's say, monetary. Because you see, for me, the CFA franc zone is a colonial zone. So we have to break that zone. But having a single currency beyond the CFA franc zone, for me, is not either the answer. Because, you know, the European Union kind of a project, a neoliberal project, you see, and the Eurozone is typically a neoliberal project. And it was not done, let's say, to enhance the welfare of ordinary people, but to strengthen the power of global finance. And we in Africa are blindly following, for me, what is a dystopia. The Eurozone construction monetary agreement, for me, is a dystopia. And we are blindly following that. Would recommend is that each country has its own national currency. But having a national currency does not mean a lack of solidarity between countries. Because if you want to develop trade between us, we could what is called rational payment and settlement system. That means we would trade between ourselves using our own currencies, but not the US dollar, not the euro, not any other foreign currency.
That was Ndongo Sila, a development economist and program research manager at the West Africa office of the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Veganism is spreading among South Africa's young socially aware residents who note that their quest to eliminate animal products from their diets has provoked interesting arguments about the role of meat in African culture and spirituality. Viewer's Anita Powell looks at the new wave of Afri-vegans from Johannesburg.
Meat may be meeting its match as more and more South Africans are experimenting with vegetarian and vegan lifestyles. Veganism, which entails cutting out all meat and animal-derived products such as dairy, eggs, and honey, is slowly growing globally. A Google Trends report ranks South Africa 14th globally in searches for vegan, the only African nation to place so high. While there is no official count of how many vegans there are in South Africa, the interest has led to a sprouting of vegetarian and vegan restaurants in Johannesburg, the nation's economic hub. And this year, Africa's first large-scale vegan and plant-based exposition will land in Cape Town. Many new vegans cited moral and health reasons, like 41-year-old financial advisor Diala Nayagar, who made the switch last year after being a lifelong omnivore.
And I got introduced to this whole new way of eating, healthy eating, organic type food from plants, and I couldn't believe it. Like I said, blew my mind, and I got fully involved into it and haven't turned back.
But, say the owners of one of Johannesburg's hippest, newest vegan eateries, vegans don't have to explain themselves to anyone. Though they have weathered their share of questions and criticisms, says Baneka Tseki, co-owner of the Nest Space Yoga Studio and Vegan Cafe.
Where do I even start? Someone said I'll die. and that very seriously I've been advised that I will get sick if I continue to eat this way.
Her business partner, Anesum Vigil, who's also a medical doctor, says science supports a vegan diet. Both women are yoga instructors and say they feel stronger and better having cut meat from their diet.
Meat is full of saturated fat, and saturated fat is a huge cardiovascular risk. It leads to heart attacks, strokes. It's been implicated in diabetes as well. And your veggies and your fruit don't have that, so or have very low levels of that. So I think in terms of that, if you're eating the correct portion and you're eating the right thing, then totally a vegan lifestyle can definitely be healthier than a meat-based diet.
But veganism can be a lonely road. South Africa is the continent's top consumer of beef, veal, pork, poultry, mutton, and lamb, according to data from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Many South Africans we approached expressed horror at the thought of giving up meat, which is central to celebrations and spirituality and is a mainstay at family gatherings and celebrations. That's a challenge for many African vegans, including Vigil.
In African culture, a big part of a family's net worth is their livestock. Their livestock define the wealth of a family. And so when you slaughter an animal at a gathering, it's seen as you giving of yourself. Whereas getting some vegetables from your veggie patches doesn't really equate to the same amount of giving. So I think that that's still something that I think the African continent as a whole will need to grapple with when it comes. And I think that's one of the barriers to veganism for people of African cultures.
And she says there are social implications to giving up meat. Her father runs a cattle farm in Zimbabwe and employs many members of his community. If he cut out his meat business, she says, he would hurt the livelihoods of others. But some South Africans are finding a mindful middle path. 31-year-old Tendiwe Ngubeni, a communications specialist, still eats meat, but less and less of it as time goes by.
I feel way more energized when I eat a vegetarian or vegan meal. It actually just gives me more energy.
Tseki, who has been vegan since 2017, endorses the slow and steady approach.
There's no right way of doing anything. I think, yes, there are many benefits of being vegan, especially for the animals in terms of them being killed and all of that. But this is a choice that only you can make.
So she says, for the vegan curious, just take it one bite at a time. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. In Malawi, the man accused by the country's anti-corruption commission of allegedly trying to bribe judges of the Constitutional Court is supposed to appear in court today, Thursday. The court is hearing the case about Malawi's May 21, 2019 presidential election brought by two opposition parties against the Elections Commission and President Peter Mutharika. A verdict is expected any time next month. The anti-corruption commission arrested Thompson Pinganjira Wednesday after it said it received a complaint from the Chief Justice that some people allegedly attempted to bribe the five judges of the Constitutional Court. Mr. Pinganjira is the Chief Executive Officer of the Financial Holdings Limited. Makumbo Mutale, a Malawi governance commentator and a member of the Political Association of Malawi, says a magistrate court in Zumba granted Mr. Pinganjira bail late last night. And more than a dozen people were shot and killed Wednesday in an attack by armed men in South Sudan's disputed Abyei region. The United Nations Interim Force for Abyei, which is working to keep peace in the region, says it has deployed forces to contain the situation. And that's it for this Thursday, January 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Claudine and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Butt in Washington saying have a nice day.
Rock and roll, America's finest export. Our culture and music of today are permanently indebted to the pioneers who trailblazed this musical tradition. Listen to Border Crossings on February 6th to hear rock's greatest musicians like Jerry Lee Lewis, Buddy Holly, and Elvis Presley. Only on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, sub-Saharan African nations continue to struggle with their anti-corruption efforts. corruption on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.